The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Let's see. Well, we've been talking about the beginning stuff and the fears and the pitfalls, and now I'm lucky enough to have author Stephanie Moyers on the show with me to talk I Should Be Writing Season 8, Episode 46.
But I should be writing.
I'm losing count. I think it's
46. That's incredible. I'm the lucky one. Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
Thank you. It's great having you here, Stephanie. Welcome to I Should Be Writing.
Thank you.
This is the podcast for wannabe fiction writers. If you're new to the show, I've been doing it since 2005 when I hadn't sold anything, and now I've sold several books and stories, and I'm still doing it because all the problems I talked about 18 years ago are still there. I don't know why, but I figured out how to deal with them, so that's kind of what I try to talk about on the show and what I bring other people to talk about too. So delighted to have Stephanie Moyers on. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you. How are you, Mer?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm getting back into streaming and podcasting after a month off, and first couple of episodes felt very rusty, but I'm feeling a little better today.
It always takes a minute to get back into the flow of something.
Yeah, big time. Kind of sucked having John Scalzi on as my first episode back and having all the audio break at once, so that was
no
fun.
Of course,
luckily he had a ukulele, so he just played while I tried to fix things, so at least people
were
amused.
That's incredible. I was going to say, I'm not that talented, so yeah. If something happens, I have no musical creativity for you there.
Oh, that's okay. Luckily, we've had no problems, so we're good. We usually start the show by talking about what I've been up to, and I've mainly been up to just getting back into things. I've been doing either domestic stuff, errands, or podcast stuff for the past couple of days. Thursday's always harder than Tuesday because not a lot of time has passed since the last time I asked myself that question of what I've been doing. But Stephanie, what are you working on right now?
I'm working on the sequel to the novel I just put out, What Happens In. Mm-hmm. So I released it in April, and I had ideas for the sequel before I finished it. And I usually don't like to write two books at once, but I had ideas back in the fall, and I always do NaNoWriMo in mm-hmm. November. So I started to write them down, and then I put it away for a couple months while I finished the first book. And now that it's out in the world, I'm like, okay, I can come back to this and slowly start to work away at it, because I think I want to make it into a whole series.
Mm-hmm. That's very exciting.
Thank you.
Are you a plotter or a pantser?
Pantser. I have never plotted in my life, and sometimes people, I'm not the best sometimes when someone asks me, like, oh, what's your writing advice for that? I'm like, I think just whatever works for you
is
the honest answer. Like, if you're a plotter, by all means, plot. If you are by the seat of your pants like me, if I plot, it actually takes me more time and it takes me out of the flow. I tend to get an idea, and if I force myself to sit down to write, more ideas just naturally come.
Yeah, I've tried to outline, and it's taken me longer to write because my pitch has not matched what my editor thought, what the sense of the book my editor got from the pitch. It didn't turn into that, and so
it changes along the way.
Yeah, so I've had to do lots of rewrites. Yep. And I'm kind of like, do I ever want to sell a book on spec again? Not on spec, the other one. Sell a book on proposal again, because as a pantser, I just discover so much along the way that I'd never thought of when I was outlining it. It's very, very painful. before we get talking in depth to Stephanie, let's talk about good news. If you guys have any good news or any rejections to add to Team Rejection, let me know. I don't have any news on my end. Not the only news I have is that Rosa has decided to hang out with me today, but I haven't set up dog cam, and she's kind of back there behind the green screen, so it'd be hard to get her. But she's back there.
She's your production assistant today.
She is. 8 rejections and 1 acceptance publication in June. That's amazing, Under Pope.
Hey, that's incredible.
That's awesome. The yay button is working. Awesome. Cool. Well done, Under Pope. And we're going to hit that rejection button.
You're getting in the flow. It's all good.
I am. I'm working. I'm trying to get in the flow. There we go. Now the button should work. Here we go. So that's 1, 2. My good news is my brain is doing better than yesterday. That is excellent news.
It is good news.
Shards, we're glad to have you here. That's 5, 6, 7. No, wait, it should be 215, not 13. I've been pushing them too fast, sorry.
It's catching up, I
think. Okay, there we go. The CT scan of my head came back as normal. No idea why the headaches are still... all those things are always kind of dodgy. It's like, well, you like not hearing something terrifying, but then the question remains of what's wrong.
Yeah, so what else is going on?
Sorry about the headaches, though. Not a stream or a podcast production if there ain't some tech issues. Yes, I said the ain't. Space Valkyries did not say the ain't. I am the one from the South. My good news, I'm going to my first in-person Worldcon Chicago this year. That's excellent, Jess. Hopefully Yay. I'll see you there. Stephanie, if I can ask, where are you located?
I am in Nashville. I spent the last 7 years in LA, but I just moved out here. So I'm still I was telling Mara before this started, you know, if you hear thunder, there's thunderstorms. I'm still so not used to that. And everyone's like, oh yeah, welcome.
Oh, wow. I'm glad you didn't move to Arkansas or Oklahoma, because then you'd be going, tornadoes, just, you know, duck and cover.
I don't think I could do it. That would scare me. But you were just talking about tornadoes, and I was like, oh my gosh, I forget that that's a common concern for people, because I'm so spoiled coming from, grew up in Arizona, but lived in LA. So I'm like, constant sunshine? That was my life.
Drought and sunburn, I guess, is the word.
Right. Wildfires.
My good news, I finally get to sneak in a live show. Hi, Stephanie, missed you. Murray, great to see you. Glad you're here. Okay, we'll go ahead and hit the yay button one more time for anybody who... for everybody else and anybody who did not say their good news or doesn't think their news is good, but... it sounded so much better in my head. I don't know. Some people may not want to talk about the rejections, is what I'm saying, but we're still cheering for you because you're still a writer and you're doing the job. My book is being released in the U.S. and Canada on the 1st of January. That's excellent. I've been wanting to get your book. I've been looking at it. HS Valley and Z. Book sounds amazing, but couldn't get it on stateside. So that is excellent. We'll hope you get us a link when it gets a little closer to release day. Congratulations. All right, well, that is about it for good news. If you guys have any news, if you're listening to this later and you have good news, email me with good news in the subject line and we'll say it on the next episode. Stephanie, do you have any good news you'd like to share? Shall we just move on to the interview?
I do have one piece of good news.
Oh, boy.
I was reached out to by New York Review of Books, and... I guess they're like a subset of the New Yorker.
Okay.
And they found my book. I had it reviewed on independent book reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And they offered me a feature in their summer issue, and that just came out today. So that was exciting. I guess
that's really cool.
A lot of people on their list. So I'm like, it's my first official ad. So that was exciting.
That's great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yay button. Where is the yay button? There it is.
Yay button. Yay. Someone says hi from Tornado Alley.
Yes. Good news. I had a gross disturbing idea for a horror story. That's great. Mm-hmm. Gross disturbing is awesome.
Write it down, man.
Okay, Kimmy's new tooth got fixed. Good news all over the place, guys. That's great.
So I'm taking a pause to tell you about a show I think you'll enjoy, Play On Podcasts, epic audio adventures that reimagine Shakespeare's timeless tales, featuring original music composition and the voices of award-winning actors. Each episode explores plays from Macbeth to A Midsummer Night's Dream. It's one of my favorites. In a way that you can actually understand it, and created specifically for the podcast form by some of America's most exciting playwrights, directors, and composers, and performed by stage and screen's best. Check out their current season of King Lear that stars Emmy winner Keith David and Severance star Tramell Tillman. Hear Shakespeare like you've never heard before. Subscribe to Play On Podcasts wherever you get your podcasts.
So anyway, we have Stephanie Moyers here. I'm so excited because you're not only a writer, but you're an editor, and you're a freelancer, and you have a kick-ass author website, which is all stuff that we've been talking about or want to talk about. So first, let's talk about your book that came out in April. It is What Happens In, and people can probably guess where the setting is, but just in case, go ahead and tell us about it.
So What Happens In is a serial killer thriller based around a stripper who is our protagonist, and she takes out basically the really scummy men that come to the high-end strip club in Las Vegas that she works at, totally fictional, and she has kind of like a vigilante edge to her. I was going for more of like, you know, the series You on Netflix, which was adapted from books, but with a female protagonist, because I feel like we haven't really seen that before, and I wanted to see that. So she takes out these men until she unknowingly falls in love with the FBI agent hunting her, and that's the premise.
Nice.
My roundabout way of saying it. I haven't said it in a while, so I was like, wow, I jumbled that. It was about three times too long, but, you know.
Well, no, it's not an elevator pitch. You're allowed to, like, stretch it out a little bit and give us some details.
Okay. You know what I mean, though? You get some used to that as an author, where it's like, someone asks you your story idea, it has to be two sentences, and I'm like, how do I say this? How do I say a whole book in two sentences?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's an important skill, because if you can't, you could probably mention most of your favorite books in two sentences, and if you can't do it to your own book, then
that's true.
That's either a problem with your presentation, which is easier, or a problem with the book, which is less easy to fix. So,
true.
But yeah, the book looks great. The cover design's amazing. Really like.
Thank you. I did it myself.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I should have grabbed an image. I'm sorry.
Oh, all good.
Anyway, if we don't get it in the chat, we'll get it in the show notes for sure.
Okay. Yeah, so, it should just be on Amazon.
So you've done sci-fi before, and now you're pivoting to like a non-speculative serial killer type story. Why the change in genre?
You know, honestly, I've tried multiple genres. This was actually the fifth novel that I wrote, and I would say all of them were different genres, but the one thing they had in common was they all centered around a female protagonist. Mm-hmm. So the very first one I wrote was more of like a military romance. Then this is over the span of about 12 years, by the way. This is not a short amount of time. The first one was a military romance. The second one was a young adult fantasy. Game of Thrones was huge at the time. Mm-hmm. The third one was more just like women's fic, nothing too intense genre either way, just kind of like an everyday life story. The fourth was sci-fi, and now the fifth was thriller. But I feel like I needed to go that journey because I love reading so many different types of books, and I did not know for the longest time where my voice was. Mm-hmm. And the only way to find that is to practice. And how do you practice? You just have to try something and write it, you know?
Right. Have you landed on the serial killer thriller genre, or do you think you're going to keep trying stuff?
I honestly feel like I have finally found my voice. Like, even as I was writing it before it came out, I felt lit up by writing this story. Like, this is it. Like, this is the one. Whereas other ones, I kind of felt like maybe I was even trying too hard, or I had to go like reference other novels. It's like, well, what do other people do? Whereas this one was just, no, I love this genre, and I had an idea, and it just flowed. And every author knows that feeling when it finally clicks, and you can't force it, but when it does, you're like, this is it. And I'm already like 30K into the sequel, and I have so much more to say. So I'm like, I'm just gonna, as long as I can, ride out the story, tell the protagonist's story, and see where it takes me.
Excellent. You have an excellent website, and that'll be in the show notes.
Thank you.
But you go there and you see that you're not only a novelist, you're a freelance editor on Fiverr, and you've also got your website has just got some excellent photos of you. And we've been talking about presenting yourself, how you decide on doing headshots, what you look for. All I know is my experience, which was a photographer was coming to WorldCon one year and just offering mm-hmm. photo shoots with authors. And so I got one headshot and I got it into black and white and color. and I like it. I'm happy with
like,
it.
But that's the one.
Yeah, that was the one. And so I don't know what anybody else does. And this is another one of those things that it's like every author has one. So you assume there's a something we all do, but there's not. It's people kind of go about it their own way.
We don't talk about it, do we?
Not really. Yeah. But you've got like a whole series of shots, and that's just really cool. So how did you go about doing that, and you know, the poses and the photographer and all that? Tell us about it.
Exactly what you said. I just felt like other authors I had seen have at the very least like their headshot, their author photo, mm-hmm. you know, back of the book, jacket cover, whatever is your website. And I had never had a professional photo shoot done prior to this one. And I have the basics, you know, like I have a ring light. I mean, phones take good enough pictures nowadays. I even bought like a black screen, like how you have a green screen, a mm-hmm. black screen, but it still felt too much like I'm literally taking a selfie in my room, and you mm-hmm. can kind of tell. So I went through, this is when I lived in LA, it was last fall. I just looked up photographers in the LA area, which there are plenty. And I picked a woman and I kind of told her my idea. I said, I want to do half edgy photos because it's more just my personality, and half professional. And she recommended a bunch of spaces. There's actually a website, I forget the name of it now, but there was a website where you can go and look up rentable studio spaces. That it can be anything from someone's apartment that they've decorated to a warehouse to a rooftop, and you rent it by the hour. And we found this space. It was like $60, and that's what you'll see if you go to my site. Then like there were books that were props, there was a bookshelf, there was like a skull painted on the wall, there was neon lights, there was like a velvet couch, like all
the
stuff.
Oh, the picture with the skull is really nice.
Thank you. That was so my vibe. Like, it was perfect. So we just had that one location. We're there for 2 hours, and she told me, I said, how many looks can I get? She's like, bring all your own clothes, do your own makeup, but you can bring up to 6 different outfits, and we'll do like 15 minutes for each. I just Googled poses people do on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I picked my photos and we just ran with it. And I got like 20 good photos out of that one session.
Wow.
Which I feel like it was worth it. It was only like $200 for that whole thing. It really wasn't much.
That is not a lot for good photography. That's great.
And in LA too. So I feel like just Instagram, and I just DMing someone like, hey, I'm a writer. I don't know what photos I need, but let's just try a couple things. And I'm going to probably use those forever. I got lucky with that.
That's great.
Thank you.
When in your career did you decide to do this?
The photo shoot?
Yeah.
It was just last fall. So I think before that, I had actually done one other photo shoot with the same woman in the spring. So they were both within the span of 6 months of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the one in the spring was not for anything professional. It was more like I had never had a photo shoot. I was not feeling great at that point in my life. And I wanted to do it as something fun to feel good. I was like, mm-hmm. why not do this for myself? And then 6 months later was when I kind of had the thought, because I had started doing very well with freelancing. And I feel like if people looked me up, all they saw was my Instagram, and I wanted something a little bit more professional for them to land on when they searched me online.
Mm-hmm. Well, you definitely achieved that. That's
thank you.
It's an amazing site, really. It's definite author goals there.
Thank you. I just updated it today.
Another thing you've got is your Fiverr gig. And I felt very old and out of touch realizing I'd heard of Fiverr, but I hadn't seen exactly how deep it goes. So you're not only a writer, you also edit books and you advertise on Fiverr. So tell, you know, I feel like I'm the only one who doesn't know this, but just in case, how did that come about? And tell us what Fiverr is.
You're definitely not the only one. I would say 2 years ago, which is really not that long, I was in the same space. I'm like, I've heard of it. I'd never been on there. My knowledge was I've heard of it, mm-hmm. and it stopped there. It was in the pandemic. So I had worked corporate jobs in Hollywood for about 7 years, trying to find any type of networking connection footing to either get into a writer's room, to meet with a lit agent, whatever I could get, I was going to take. Didn't really happen. And I was just at corporate jobs for the longest time and didn't like it. So when the pandemic hit, I saw this. I was like, this is an opportunity for me to figure out how to make a living from my writing. And I had set a goal to never go back into the office, not knowing how long the pandemic was going to last either. And I think it was just part luck and part intention, because I found out about Fiverr, of all places, on TikTok. I was bored one day, as we all were in the pandemic, scrolling through TikTok. I came across a girl younger than me. Her name is Alex, and we're friends now, actually. And she posted something saying she made 6 figures copywriting on Fiverr. And I remember sitting there, and I was like, there's no way someone can make 6 figures from writing blogs. Like, how is that? You know, it's got to be one of these like scam people. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't a thing. Like, I would have heard of it. And then the other part of me is like, maybe it is a thing, and maybe I just haven't heard of it. Like, who am I to judge this without even trying it? And she said Fiverr. So I was like, all right, what have I got to lose? I tried Upwork, not really had too much luck there. So I tried Fiverr. And I think part of the luck came from the fact that it was the pandemic and all these businesses and authors were forced to go online, whether or not they wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
So the demand was there. And I first started by offering just blogs, health and business blogs. And then that expanded into people asked me to edit their documents, emails, letters, whatever it was. I was like, sure, 15, 20 bucks here and there. And then I was like, well, I love reading. And I actually like editing more than writing blogs for other people. So I put up a book editing gig. And then that, about 3 months later, it took some time, that took off. And that has, to this day, been my biggest earner. And how Murr knows this, but how we connected, her mm-hmm. assistant found me on Fiverr to edit his book. And that's how this all came together, which I think is beautiful. Like, mm-hmm. look what can happen from editing books. You just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's being, I'm not going to ask your incredible details. That's rude. But so it has been lucrative for you.
Oh, not rude at all. I never know how to talk about it. I'm like, I don't mind talking about money, but I also am very careful because I don't want to be the person who's like, I made this amount of money online, because I hate seeing people like that sometimes. Like,
yeah, but there's also the whole backlash of especially with women, hearing how much they make.
Yes.
It's people don't like hearing women make money. So I know lots of men who will be forthcoming with what they earn in science fiction, and their women are just like, hell no, I'm not telling you that.
Girlfriend Alex got a lot of hate for her posting it, but at the same time, I guess her posting it showed me it was possible. So for me, I did make 6 figures my first year. I pulled in about $115,000 just from Fiverr in 1 year. Yeah,
that's amazing.
It's been very up and down since, I will say, like, since the world kind of normalized.
Mm-hmm.
But I still do it for a living. Like, it is my full-time thing. And with the experience from Fiverr, I'm almost 2 years into it now. I started in July of 2020, and now it's July 2022. I am able to use that experience to get other jobs. So in addition to Fiverr, I'm a contributor for an online journal called Dallas Express. They found me on Fiverr and then hired me outside the platform and pay me way above my Fiverr rate, which is nice.
Wow.
I do that weekly. And then I actually just got a job, part-time contract, but with a PR firm in Los Angeles that also pays pretty well. But I wouldn't have been able to have any of these without that first set of experience. So mm-hmm. that was really just the door to the rest, I think.
So a lot of times when we're complaining that we can't get certain jobs because we don't have experience in doing those jobs, but we can't get the experience to do the jobs without the jobs themselves.
Yes.
This is one of those ways we can get around that. You can say,
yes,
you did do these jobs on this platform, kind of thing.
And for a couple of years, you know.
Yeah.
And then I have a portfolio too. Like, mm-hmm. I'll find my best pieces, even if it's ghostwriting, then, and I'll just save them as PDFs. I have a Google Drive link that I send to anyone. And so now they can look back and see, like, oh, okay, she did write these things.
Jess has been thinking about getting on it. This is very encouraging. Jess, if you have any more questions, please let us know. This is the time to ask them, really. I remember when I tried to start building some sort of publishing career, I thought about getting into editing. And this, oh boy, this is back when you had to buy an ad in the back of Writer's Digest.
I love Writer's Digest.
Yeah, had to, and I bought the big doorstop, Chicago manual style, and all that stuff. This was before it was online. I'm feeling very old right now, and it never really gelled for me.
But I think the
Fiverr is a definite good place. Jess asks, did you feel like you needed special training to do professional editing?
Honestly, no. I think for me, it came more from the fact that I've been writing so long, and even for books, like we're just talking about, like I gave myself the experience. I personally wrote and edited all five of my novels. And for my novels, because I couldn't afford to hire an editor in the past. And so for me, I had a method of going through every novel a minimum of 3 times. And I've always just been like a stickler for grammar. I was that friend who would like correct people, still am. So I think those two things combined at least led me to have like a little bit more of an eye. Like I can even skim something and I'm like, oh, I see grammar here. I see this. I see punctuation. I see this is way too wordy, or basic things people do. Like they'll start their sentences with filler words like so and just, like surfacey simple stuff. It's usually just what people need the most help with.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need anything super advanced. And if they do, they're probably going to hire a more professional editor. I would. But I just do very basic proof, grammar, spelling, copy. Nothing too in-depth. I don't do developmental editing. I don't do deep formatting. Just very easy stuff. Developmental is way too much work. I tried it for a bit for people. And I found like, I got good feedback on the notes that I give, but one, it was very time consuming for me. And two, I just didn't really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I would rather just like polish someone's already set prose and focus on writing my own stories versus critiquing someone else's. I don't know how else to explain it. I kind of felt like it drew from my own creative energy pool for stories. And I did not like that. That's why I keep it to just very simple, surfacey stuff that I do for them.
Right. Jasmine asked, if someone plagiarized a work and you didn't realize it until after you edited it, does it affect you on Fiverr, or is that only an issue for the author, quote unquote author?
It would be for the author.
Yeah.
I mean, it typically like, so if I'm writing a blog for someone, for example, I myself either cite things or run it through Copyscape, which is a plagiarism checker, just to make absolute sure that what I'm writing is original. If it's something they wrote, I don't run it through plagiarism unless they ask me to, because if they're going to publish it, it's going to be on them. Like my name is nowhere, even in terms of editing.
Mm-hmm.
I think like 6 people have credited me and they've asked me ahead of time if they can. And I'm like, I'm fine with it. But for the most part, I prefer to even be a ghost editor, because if you look me up on Amazon, I would rather you not see all these books I've edited. I just want you to see my novels.
Mm-hmm.
But you will see some, actually. You'll see my name as editor for a few books. So I'm just like, exactly to avoid that. If something happens with their work, I'm like, I don't want any part of that. I just edited it on Fiverr and we're done. I did not write your book.
Right. There's a clarification. The plagiarism site is Copyscape?
Yes.
Okay.
It's free too. It's a good
site. Oh, good. Mary Robinette edits backwards. Last sentence in the book first. I don't think I've heard this gamer, Gramp.
Is that I haven't heard that either.
So she goes from the last sentence that feels backwards.
How does that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I should probably find her and ask her.
I need more details.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, I've discovered that reading aloud is the best thing, and I never have the patience to read aloud, which is the terrible, paradox of my writing career. So I remember finding errors when I was narrating my own audiobook, finding errors and knowing it was way, way too late to fix anything. It was heartbreaking. Yeah. So when you, without, it's tough to talk about book 2 without spoiling. I know, because I just finished a book 2 and I can't tell anybody about it because it spoils book 1.
Yay.
But you said you had your book two ideas when you were writing book one, and I'm trying to figure out how to ask questions about this, because there are questions, but I don't want you to spoil anything. Is it like you thought of where the story could go after, or is it more like a serial, not an arc story, but a serialized story, whereas character is in X position now doing X adventure, but it'd be really cool if she were over here doing Y adventure, and that can be book two? Or how did you feel that out?
It is serialized, so I have it be continuous. Like, book two does pick up right where book one left off. And I already knew I was far enough into book one, I was almost done writing it, that I knew how I was going to end it already at that point. And so when I started to have ideas for book two, I just started writing them down. So I was like, if I wait 6 months to write these ideas, they're going to be gone. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just what happens to me. So I was like, I'm going to start writing them. If I can use them, great. If by the time I finish book one, I make changes and they're irrelevant, I mean, oh well, then book two goes out the window. But at that point in time, I felt like I sensed this kind of bridge with things that was happening in my own life that I drew reference from. And I kind of felt like, well, wait a minute, this might be a good way to kind of spin it in a fictional sense and continue for the character. And so far, it's been working out. So without ruining anything, I drew a lot of inspiration from Carolyn Kepnes' series, You, that was made into the Netflix show. Love the show, love the books. The books are very different from the show. And I felt like she writes in a way that is very simple, but very intelligent at the same time. So you're in Joe Goldberg's head in the book. And I feel like they do have the voiceover on the show, but in the book, you hear so much more. Like, you legitimately feel like you are this character and seeing the world through his eyes. And her books are really long, but so much of it is just you're in his head. And I felt like some people might say that it's too wordy or too long in that sense, but I personally, as the reader, I loved that because it made the character feel more real.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of what I took for Knox as my protagonist. Like, you're in her head, and I go through these whole sequences. So sometimes in real life, like, I would be inspired by something and be like, oh my gosh, Knox would have this thought or that. Like, you know, characters live in our heads and be like, she'd think this, she'd say this. And I would just write a whole little passage that would wind up being 10 pages long about what she would do or think in a certain scenario. And it started to just all kind of fit together. Mm-hmm. I guess that's being a pantser. You know, I just write things, and if it works, it works. And if not, I'm like, it's okay. At least I tried it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The anti-plot.
Yeah. So I've been trying to go back to basics, as I said. And one thing that really inspires me about the way you go about stuff is you said you tried different genres and you wrote full books and you put them out, and then you decided to go to other genres. And it didn't sound like you were plagued by a lot of second guessing or quitting in the middle because it wasn't working out, or deciding to go back and edit the book until it was down to one perfect sentence and nothing else. And it's just really cool how you have tried everything before you hit on your serial killer thriller genre.
Thank you.
How do you recommend anybody else to go about this? Because as I said in the last episode, you know, we fear a lot of stuff that isn't really a threat, like fear of failure, fear of success, but we can get into real pitfalls like plagiarizing, perfectionism. That's the word, perfectionism. Yeah. And you know, comparing yourself to others and stuff. And it sounds like you sidestepped all of that. How did you do that?
I think for me, it was more about the cliche saying, messy action wins. You know, it's like, I have seen too many people, friends, coworkers over the years who are brilliant writers and they have a good story, but they've been sitting on it for 10 years. Because like you said, they're like, I worked with this guy once, will remain anonymous, but I read his book. I genuinely loved it. And I was like, what are you doing with this? What are your plans? And actually, not an exaggeration, he's like, over the last 10 years, I keep tweaking it. I keep hiring different editors. And I was like, listen, like, you can edit something to death and you will still, like you said, you will still go back when it's published and be like, oh, I could have changed this. Oh, I could have changed that.
Yeah.
And you're just going to stand in your own way. So for me, it was more like, I just want to write because I always compared it to music. Like, for musicians, you can practice on an instrument alone in your room before you get on stage. But for writers, the only practice is to just do it and put it out there. So the more you write, the more you find, like, the same with music. Like, oh, am I a rock star? Do I like jazz? Do I like this? Do I like that? Like, you're not going to know until you try. So I had to try a couple of genres to find, like, even ask myself, am I writing this just because it's popular? Am I writing this because I like reading it, but maybe I'm not so good at writing it? That was the sci-fi case. I'm like, I like reading it. I don't think I'm the best sci-fi writer, and I'm okay with that. And then over time, I realized something I always loved were serial killer thrillers like Dexter and You, and the other vigilante stories like Kill Bill, you know, that wasn't a book. But I was like, two things. One, I always write about female protagonists. Two, I like serial killer things. I cannot think of a single story where there was a female serial killer, especially one that you're rooting for. Like, she's not overly evil. Like, the feedback I get is people genuinely love Knox, and that's what I wanted. Like, she's just a flawed human who does what she needs to do. And I think that above the genre is more what made this true to me, is that I wrote a very real and flawed character that people can sympathize with.
I'm trying to look up. I do know one serial killer book you need to read.
Tell me. I'm sure there's serial killer women ones. I'm just like, I can't, like, off the top of my head, like, I could not. Kill Bill came to mind, but it's obviously not a book. I love Tarantino movies.
Right. I think it's Chelsea. Yes. Chelsea Summers, A Certain Hunger.
Okay.
It started as an audiobook via Audible, but I believe she sold the print rights as well. And it's an Epicurean love child of Elizabeth Bathory. I don't know who that is. Anyway, I sort of see it as it basically, she loves food, she loves men, she loves killing, and she loves cannibalism. And so it's really, it's a very disgusting book. It's like, and you know, she got crap for being a woman writing this disgusting book about a woman, and it's just delightful. Seeing her,
I was gonna
push.
Say, I love that.
Yes,
more power to you. Let's go.
Yes, check out A Certain Hunger by Chelsea Summers. I don't know if you can root for this protagonist, but that makes a different kind of interesting story.
Absolutely,
but, it really is interesting. Christian Writing says Elizabeth Bathory was rumored to have people killed so she could bathe in their blood to stay young. Okay. So it's her plus Lestat. That's the
That's dark. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. It's, when I read it, the only problem I had was it got too gory at one point to where I'm like, anybody suffering this much trauma would just lie down and die. I'm just not, I wasn't buying that, but I will not lie. It is a gory book with cannibalism and murder, and but still, it's awesome. Oh, My Sister the Serial Killer. I have that. I haven't read it yet.
I read that one. I did read that. Thank you. I forgot about that. I did read that book. It was good. I feel like mine is more like, I just always revert back to Joe Goldberg because that was such a huge inspiration for me with Carolyn. And she's just more your everyday person. Like, even reading the book, like, there's nothing, yeah, she kills people, but she's not a cannibal. There's nothing too gory or sadistic. Like, if you were seeing her out in the world, like, you wouldn't know. Kind of same as Joe or Dexter, you know, where some people are a little suspicious, but for the most part, he just seems like a guy. And if you found out, you would be floored because he's really just doing it for his own vigilante reasons. And then that's like the feminism side of my story as well, is like she of course has like a whole traumatic backstory about why she started killing men in the first place, and it is only men and specifically men, and she doesn't hate them. She's not out there like F all men. She's not like that. But if she deems someone worthy of being taken down a peg or being taken out altogether, she'll be the one to do the job, which I feel like, especially in current times, like, we need a little more of that girl power in the world. So I was happy to write that, even if it's fictional.
Excellent. Well, I believe I am done with my questions. Is there anything else you would like to discuss in our final moments? Final minutes, I should say. Not like I'm about to flip the switch or anything, but...
I don't know. I would say, what's a book you're reading right now? I always love to know that from other authors. Or what's next up?
I just finished The House Across the Lake by Riley Sager. I think that's what it's called.
Oh, is that good? I have that on my wish list.
It's pretty good. I liked it. I was yelling at my phone, listening to it on Audible. I was yelling at it a little bit during the climax.
Ooh, why? I want to know. Without ruining it.
I can't. It's hard not to ruin it.
Okay. You just didn't care for the resolve in the end.
I think that some things brought about in Act 3 were out of the blue. That's all I'll say. And
that's enough. That makes sense.
If you read it,
like, wait.
It's not a deal breaker. It was more like a, really? That? No, what? So if you do read it, message me. I'm curious to hear what you think, because it's possible I just got too cranky about it. But
I get that way too. I yell at the Audible. I'm like, yeah, what are you thinking?
Yeah. Yeah.
Either to the character or the writer, sometimes both.
Yeah, I got on a Slack with some friends and I started yelling and someone's like, I live for your thriller rants. I'm like, do I have thriller rants? Oh, crap.
That's your TikTok right there, thriller rant.
Yeah, I guess so. The problem is that I started a side podcast connected to I Should Be Writing called Spoilers Club because I wanted to talk about books and talk to authors about why they made certain decisions without worrying about spoiling, because a lot of times when you're interviewing somebody, you're not going to say all the spoiler bits. And so a lot of times when you're complaining, especially about stuff like psychological thrillers, the stuff you want to complain about is probably something in the twisty parts. And nobody wants to be spoiled. So that's the rough thing.
That's true. Like, I love Catherine Stedman, writes really good thrillers, and there's definitely questions I have sometimes. But like you said, you're like, how do I ask? How do I get this answer? I just want to, it's not even a complaint. It's more like, I want to know where your mind was going that you wrote this part.
Yeah, exactly.
Author to author, what were you thinking? Tell me.
Yeah, that's what this is trying to be. Only it's got to be a book club because everybody watching should have already read it, or else they'll get spoiled. So that's the plan, is like, tell people to read a book, give them a couple of months, and then have the author on. So, oh, thank you, Kay Kimmy. I'm having fun with it. We just had John Scalzi on a couple of days ago. So talking about Kaiju Preservation Society. I'm checking out Catherine Stedman's stuff now.
She's good. I like her. Something in the Water was my favorite.
Yeah. Cool. I'll check it out. Thank you.
Yeah.
The Disappearing Act. That's the one I want to get.
That's
on my wish list.
That's on my list too. Yeah. I have a never ending wish list on, I'm sure we all do.
Yeah. Yeah. But I did just read the advanced reader's copy of Meru by S.B. Divya. And that was very, very good. And I just started nonfiction, Pity the Reader by Kurt Vonnegut and one of his longtime buddies. And
I love him. Yeah. I have So It Goes tattooed on me from Slaughterhouse 5. That's my favorite book.
Awesome. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, Vonnegut. Love it.
Yeah, so I'm listening to that. It's a little hard to listen to because you can tell some of it's supposed to be visual because she compares like how he was edited. So she'll say, here's what he wrote, and she'll read an entire paragraph. And then she'll say, here's how he was edited, and she'll read another paragraph. And I'm like, I can't remember what was taken out because I can't go back.
Yeah, you need to like see the documents and
Hi. Doggo is awake. She came over to yawn at me.
She's like, okay, pay attention to me now. You're done.
Yes. So where can we find you online, Stephanie?
You can find me. My website is www.steffmoyers.com. And everything else is my name, my Fiverr, my Instagram, my TikTok. Everything is just Stephanie, but with two F's, not a PH, Moyers.
Yes.
You type my name once, everything pops up.
Yeah. Well, those will
all
be in the show notes.
And my books are just on Amazon. Okay, good.
Yes.
Thank you. This was fun.
It was a lot of fun having you on. Thank you. If you want to learn more about me, Merverse.com is where you can do that. And Yeah, I'm going to be streaming. My streaming schedule is back to normal now. It is Monday at 12, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at 3. So Ditch Diggers, I Should Be Writing, Gaming, and then I Should Be Writing Again. Thank you, everybody in chat, for hanging
out. Thank you, everyone.
And, yep, I guess that's it. Y'all take care.
I Should Be Writing is available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks. And hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at Merverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support.
Doctor Who.